to Dimension Comics, episode 19. Deep from the bowels of Florida, this is Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. I'm your freewheeling host, without a clue, Dallas Busha. And joining me today is...
Al.
Don.
And Rook.
Yep, we got the whole crew back once again.
And we should mention that we're coming to you from the Two Dimension Podcast secret lair.
Yes, yes, we have our own, I like to call it just straight up man cave, but it's our two-dimension podcast secret lair, which is hidden snugly somewhere in Florida. It's pretty nice. Actually, this is where my band practices as well. So we're surrounded by some speakers, some amps. We got a sweet drum set back there.
And the band is?
In the dim. We've got
I forgot to mention the half-naked women posters.
That too. And the six-foot-tall poster of Mario.
Yes, because there's nothing like a half-naked woman poster sitting next to a six-foot-tall poster of Mario.
We got some class, buddy.
The better part is a little doll stuck on the hi-hat cymbal on the drum set.
It's like the hula girl kind of thing, but not. Yeah. So, you guys like the place?
Yeah, I like it quite well.
I like it. I could actually get used to recording here. It's pretty comfy, except for the chair I'm sitting in. I'm in a drum seat right now, but it's a broken one that no one ever uses. And
yeah, we can see why no one uses it.
Yeah, the centerpiece for some reason doesn't go in all the way, so I'm balancing like precariously on this drum.
It looks like it's a drum sheet for like a tattoo from Fantasy Island or something. Man.
Hey, sure. I'm not that short.
Not far right. From it.
So, gentlemen, my friends, welcome back. It's been a little while. We didn't have an episode last week. We took a short hiatus. So, folks listening, I hope you. You're still listening. Yeah. I hope you actually still care, but I hope you check the blog because we had a couple links to some of our friends' podcasts, you know, The Bunch of Dorks, and Mao and his various podcasts and blogs as well. So, guys, anything new? What's been going on in your life since 2012 began? Anything fun?
No.
Done. Well, that's going to be a wrap for this episode.
Thanks for tuning in.
I got to tell you, and I think I said this on the New Year's episode, I got a crap load of comic books and a lot of good stuff, and we've been trading back and forth and getting a ton of great stuff, so I'm pretty stoked. I got a few things I can't wait to talk about. I don't know about you guys. Rook, how was your Christmas, man? I haven't talked to you really much since then.
It was good. Got a bunch of cool stuff. Got a bunch of Green Lantern stuff, of course.
Talk about your sweet Green Lantern headphones.
Oh, yeah, I got little Green Lantern earbuds that have the lantern symbol right on them. Nice green cord and everything. Next time I'm at the convention and I'm dressed up as Guy, I'm sure I'll be wearing these suckers, too.
You got those at the convention?
No, my wife got them for me for Christmas.
Where?
I have no idea,
well,
actually.
If she knew, it wouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, what's funny is, like, about 2 weeks before Christmas, I started looking to try and get some earbuds, because the ones I had crapped out, and I found these online. I was like, oh my god, these are so cool.
Are you Canadian? You just said out?
Whatever. Okay. But, little did I know that my wife already had them sitting hidden away in the house for Christmas, so...
Yeah, they're very cool. I like them, actually.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Only a matter of time before he gets a Green Lantern tattoo, I think.
How do you know I don't have one? Do you want to see my lantern ring?
So, Don, how was your Christmas?
It was good. It was good.
Did you get any fun things? Get anything good, new?
Yeah, I did, but I can't think of anything to talk about. Yeah, I did get some, but... I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Did you get a bunch of cool books, Don? Like Popeye and all that stuff?
Alright, yeah, I did. Thanks, Dallas. Are you trying to bring this up?
No, not at all. Al, how about your Christmas?
His wife's going to listen to this and be like, that
awesome.
Son of a
I got
bitch.
All these, I got all these cool Tarzan books, and I've been reading them all. It's awesome. Santa left a lot of great stuff under the tree this year.
That's awesome. Ellie, my wife, got me Mouse 1 and Mouse 2, which, since I was... you know, pretty young, I've always wanted to read those books, and it's something I've never read. And of course, anyone in the comics community knows how critically acclaimed those books are and how important Art Spiegelman is to the medium. So I'm really excited about diving in. I've read about the first half or maybe more of Mouse One, and I'm loving it. It does live up to expectations because it's such a gripping story, and you really get sucked in to the tale.
How far along are you on it?
I'm up to his father. What's his father's name? Vladek?
Yeah.
He was in the camp in prison, and then he came out. It's actually before the Germans invaded his hometown. But he was in prison camp while he was in the military, and he just got home, and he came back home to his wife and her family. So probably about 100 pages in.
Any one of you guys ever read Mouse?
Never have. I've always wanted to read it. I've always heard such amazing things about it, and I'm honestly, in a way, I'm kind of ashamed to say I've never read it.
Yeah, I was watching, downloaded a documentary. It was called Masters of Comic Book Art, and it had a interview with Spiegelman. And what's really interesting about that book was he drew it actual size. He said that because he wanted it to be like a real journal, he actually took like typing paper out, like if you were writing it down, and he drew it exactly the same size with like a pen or a pen and ink or whatever. So that's exactly what the originals look like, and I had no clue.
That is cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It is cool. Yeah, I didn't know there was a part two either. I thought there was just a one.
Yeah, there is. I've never, I'll be reading that one soon too. One thing I like throughout the story, it's switching the entire things from the perspective of his father, Vladek, who was in the war. And so Art kind of interviewed his father and got, you know, this tale. But it's interspersed, the book interspersed between him actually interviewing his father and then scenes of what his father's telling him. So it's neat to see Art come in with first a pen and paper, writing down what his father's telling me, and then later coming in with a tape recorder and actually recording the whole thing. And even Art's own shortcomings when him and his father get in little tiffs and arguments, you know, about things. And it's neat to see that, you know, it gives it that real human trait to it, especially, which is ironic because the tale is told as Jews being mice, Poles being pigs, and the Germans being cats.
That was big. Everybody talked about that all the time. It was in, I think it was 1989 or 1990 when I got the first one. And I was reading it. I liked how it was put together. I liked the art style. I liked how he told the story. And there were certain elements to it that really threw me. And I'm not sure if this is in the first one or the second one. But the one that got me the most was he went over to his father's place. You know, his father was remarried. You know, it was another woman that went through the Holocaust. And his father was real quiet. And then the woman said, oh, he found this. It was in a book. He found one of Art Spiegelman's real comic books he did, Underground Stories. And I guess from your look, you haven't read that one yet?
No.
Not yet.
But they reprinted it. But, you know, it was basically him, you know, the human being. But it was a story of him in a prison suit, you know, the stripes, you know. And he was basically complaining to his mom. You know, the whole story was about his mom making him feel guilty all the time. And the whole thing ended with him being in prison and, you know. But while he's complaining about all this neurotic stuff about what his mother did to him, it had one drawing of her slashing her wrist with a razor blade. But when they did that, right on their hand, it had her, the serial number tattoo in our hand. It wasn't made a big deal. It just, basically, when I read that, it kind of caught me. To R. Spiegelman, your parents would have the numbers on your hand. That's just how it was. And just matter of fact. And then later, he talked to his father, and his father said, you know, it fell out of a book, and he read it, and it upset him. You know, R. Spiegelman talked to him about, you know, what he was saying about his mother, and he goes, that was another time. And basically, he was just showing what it was like to deal, you know, an American kid growing up with parents that went through this horrifying thing. But that's the one part of the whole book that really got me, was this old cartoon he stuck in there. And it's just a matter of fact, your parents would have those serial numbers tattooed to them. So
it's just the execution of it is so good. I love it. I mean, it's just literally like a day-to-day retelling of what his father went through, but it really sucks you in. I'm loving it, though.
Well, it brings up a lot of things that you never think about, too. We've all studied the Holocaust. You know, you you know, everybody, you've seen TV specials, we studied in school.
Well, the book that I'm sure you read too, Rook, because we went to school together, is that book Night by Eli Wiesel back in high school. Maybe you didn't, but in my English class, they made me read that.
I don't recall reading that at all, honestly.
I remember I had to read that for school, and that was all about the Holocaust.
Yeah, they brought up a lot of stuff. At one point, he's talking to a doctor and who went through the Holocaust as well. And I guess at one point his father and his wife were gotten in another fight. And she says she's sick and tired of it. And Art Spiegelman says, well, he's gone through a lot. You know, he lived through the Holocaust. And the woman said, we all live through the Holocaust. He's not the only one, but we don't do these things. And all through the book, Art Spiegelman's always apologized to his father that, you know, well, he went through the Holocaust. And at one point he's talking to a doctor who went through it as well. And, you know, when he's complaining about his dad, he says, I shouldn't do that. He says, you know, I mean, he went through the Holocaust. Or he says, he survived the Holocaust. And the doctor said, oh, so only the good people survived the Holocaust? You know, and it brings up a lot of things you never think about.
Yeah, and you can just tell his dad's like a cantankerous old man, you know. You can just tell he's a mean guy. I mean, yeah, sure, he did go through that, but you bring up a good point that a lot of people went through that. Not everyone came out that way. But I can see where he'd be hard to deal with and hard to live with. I mean, that's like living with me. I'm a jerk.
all of us.
I've known you for years. You are a douche.
Yeah, buddy. Need another beer? It's going to be a pretty rough show. I should warn you guys, because Rook and I are drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon. We are rocking it.
What's rough about that? I love Pabst.
I mean, rough as in, you got some cojones.
And Don and I are drinking Pepsi, so watch out.
Sugar rush. One other thing that I was really excited about that Ellie got me that I've been wanting for a while, and it probably sounds stupid, is a bookshelf for my comics, for my graphic novels. And she got me a pretty sweet, like, 3 or 4-shelved big bookshelf, perfect for my graphic novels. So I set it up, and I put it in my closet. And up until now, I've had piles and piles of my trades and my hardcovers just kind of sitting there, and it's been a hot mess. So everything is finally in order, in alphabetical order, set up. It looks pretty. I'm loving it. I showed Don. I guess it's kind of pretty dumb to show off a bookshelf. But so excited about it, I brought a picture in and I had to show it to him. And
it was really sweet.
Good.
It was really, really nice looking. Really nice looking.
So how about New Year's, boys? Anybody do anything fun?
No.
I love that one. No.
How about you? Anything good?
Party hopping. We went to three different parties.
Did the Mick have a party?
He may have. It's not one of the ones I went to. What parties did we end up at? Ended up at the first one we went to was some of the guys I ride with.
Rough Riders.
Another party was some friends of mine from school. And then the last party was with some of my current drinking buddies. And we were at that last one till 4 in the morning.
I was in bed by 12:15. I'm an old man.
Trust me, I would have liked to have been in bed much earlier. I was the only one not drinking because I had to drive around four drunk asses.
Oh, that's hilarious. Night. Hey, at least I wasn't one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you have a tendency to puke on yourself.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. And that was I think I did that twice in my life, so shut up.
It's still funny.
Ellie wasn't feeling good, so she spent a little bit of time with her sister, but I went over to my brother's house, and we had a little bonfire, and we were drinking Amaretto and Dr. Pepper. You ever had that combination? Delicious.
No, can't say I have.
I have to say, Amaretto, I think that's what we had. It was really good. I've never had that with Dr. Pepper. You don't think that would go good together, but it did. So we just got a little bonfire going and just kind of hung out there. One thing I hate, though, going to my brother's, sitting at a little bonfire, coming back to my house, for the next 2 days I'll smell like smoke. All my clothes, you know? Oh, it's the worst thing. But it was fun. And then, we ended up going home, and I was out by 12:15. I mean, I can't remember the last time I've stayed up past that time.
You just cannot hang anymore, can you?
No, I don't. I'm an old man.
Hence all the gray hairs.
Well, you have to drive 3 hours a day, to work. So that's why
you're far away. So, I know Don and Al, you guys touched on it a little bit the last episode, but I just kind of wanted to bring up the convention that we were all at. Flipping great time, man. We had a blast. It was held by Yancey Street. It was their first annual comic book convention in Largo, Florida. It was great. All of us met up there. Rick brought his son. We just had a blast. I know you left just a bit earlier than us, Rook, and I ended up going up to one of the owners of Yancey. I can't remember his name because I don't know the guy as well, and I just, you know, I had to shake his hand and tell him he did such a great job, man, because they pulled it off.
They really do. I mean, the guys over at Yancey, they can they know how to put together comic book events. I mean, if you've ever been to Free Comic Book Day with Yancey Street, you know that it's not just your typical Free Comic Book Day. Oh, look, there's a bunch of books. They're for free. You know, here we've got a sale in the store. Oh, no. Every single year, they've always got top name artists, writers hanging out, you know, table setups, people, you know, coming in costume. So the convention was just like Free Comic Book Day times 1,000. So they really, really know how to throw an event.
That's the only place I ever go for Free Comic Day.
It was really nice because it was, like, not real big, but there was a lot of dealers, and they were actually selling stuff for reasonable prices, which is rare. So, of course, I got way too many comics.
Yeah, well, there was one place that they had. Some guy was selling trades for $3.
Yeah.
They had I Kill Giants. Great book. They had you got a bunch of stuff, didn't you? You finally got that Children of the Atom that Don and I have been telling you all about.
Yeah, and it's nice.
Rook, you ever
listen?
You ever read that? Children of the Atom? It's an old X-Men book?
I recall reading it a long time ago.
That's good. But what else did you end up getting, Al? Because you got a ton of stuff out of that box alone.
Oh, yeah, I got the Batlash books. I got like some Jimmy Olsen's. I got like the X-Men Essential number 2.
Oh, but that's the old Roy Thomas.
It's I actually like those because those are the first ones that I bought when I was a kid. Roy Thomas and Warner Roth, I think, was the artist or whatever.
Yeah,
they're a lot of Dick Ayers. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, like the Banshee and all these early characters. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, those
and,
are fun.
Yeah, some Archies, all sorts of stuff. There was a guy. That guy in the back, he had a bunch of stuff for like a buck and $2. You got some stuff from.
Yeah, what'd you get, Don?
The guy in the back is my favorite. I talked about this the last episode, which obviously you didn't listen to.
I did, I promise. No, I really did, but I
didn't.
Yeah, this is for Rook right
now.
Well,
Rook's off the grid, so, you know, he can't listen to it. But no, I just got a bunch of old back issues. I got some old 60s comics, like Dennis the Menace, several Archies, stuff like that, haphazard. The $3 trade bin. I ended up buying two books. I already had the series. I got that Chris Claremont and Frank Miller Wolverine miniseries.
Oh,
yep.
I got
that's
the single issues. You know, I liked it. But then I thought, well, it would be nice to have a trade, so I got it. And I also got Marvels, you know, by Alex Ross and, you say, Kurt
Busiek.
Yeah.
I got the single issues. I really liked them. But I thought it would be nice to have a trade. It was funny because my daughter came home from college, and she was in the room. She looked at it. Wow, what's this? She picked it up and started thumbing through it. So I told her about it, and she was really taken with it. And I said, if you want, you can keep it. Yeah, it was really interesting, you know. So she took it back with her. But she couldn't look away. That made me happy. It's a good series. But, yeah, just stuff like that. It was, actually, as I said last time, it was probably my favorite convention. I hope they do it again. It was,
Oh, yeah, they're going to. They're definitely going to be doing it again.
Well, annual?
The whole atmosphere and attitude of the show was just, it seemed like, just have fun. It was pretty relaxed. There was a lot of stuff, a lot of variety there, and it just seemed fun. I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get too much there. I basically just kind of went to hang out with you guys and to support the guys. Of course, so I bought some books from their deal. But I got some Uncanny X-Force, some of the newer stuff. I think it's written by Rick Remender, the guy that did Fury Agent. And he's a great writer. He's a good up-and-comer. I shouldn't even say up-and-comer, because he's been in the industry for a good number of years, but he can write a good tale. So I picked that up. I filled in some cracks in my All-Star Superman, which I was excited, you know. I'm a Grant Morrison douche. So that was nice. But it was honestly just great seeing you guys, and it was like having a two-dimension kind of reunion, you know, just all of us getting together and hanging out. Like you mentioned last episode, we ran into Silent Bill. Were you there when we ran into him, Rook?
Yes, we were all there when we actually finally met Silent Bill.
That's right. Yeah, it was nice to see him. Don shook him down for money and yelled at him and said, why don't you write for us anymore?
Yeah, Silent Bill, if you're listening, get to work.
I didn't know he was Silent Bill. I thought he was a listener, so I was like, dude, that's great.
Yeah, you showed up. Like, we have someone awesome. That listens to the show.
Our fan. Damn, that's we awesome,
have
dude.
Any fans. We got to meet our one your, listener.
Let me shake your hand.
And then you find out he probably doesn't even listen to the show. Silent Bill, if you're listening, I apologize and leave a comment. But this Yancey Street commercial has been brought to you by Two Dimension Podcast. And I do want to remind you though that they have a phenomenal site too. And if you're on our blog, you can actually click on the link which is on the right hand side of the blog to go to the Yancey Street website. But what is their URL? Is it YanceyStreetComics.com?
Yes, I believe it is.
I think Street is ST.
Yeah, YanceyStComics.com.
Well, they're on the sidebar of the blog.
But they're on the blog. Yeah. Check us out on there. You'll find them.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll definitely be advertising when the next time they throw a huge event. I'm sure, you know, Free Comic Day, when that comes around again, we'll be talking all about that. Hopefully all four of us will actually meet up again and go to Free Comic Book Day. We can have some great stories about that.
Yeah, maybe this year I'll be a little more sober for Free Comic Book Day.
You know, I didn't go last year, so I didn't get to see you.
No one saw me. I was there for, like, 5 minutes. I had been out heavily drinking the night before.
Oh, so you weren't crunk. You actually had a hangover.
I think I still might have been a little drunk, actually. A friend of mine just came back into town that night before, and we got wasted.
Nice.
Yeah. It's
interesting, because that's the only comic shop I've ever seen inside a mall. So I was kind of, like, surprised. But it's good. It's a really good store. He's got a nice, big selection of stuff there, and I've always enjoyed coming up there. As a matter of fact, hey Don, on the way back, maybe we can stop in.
You guys probably will.
One of the nice things about them being in the mall too is they're not like deep in the mall. They're right there by the entrance. Yeah. So like I don't have to go in and deal with like mall idiots, you know. I can go in there and scoot right in and do my thing and go right back out. So
hell yeah. I completely agree with you there. Just kind of run in, hang out with the guys and grab your books and then just run right out. It's very nice. Well, one other thing that it was a little before Christmas I got these, but I was happy to fall into a huge pile of books. My pastor actually gave me a bunch of hardcovers. He's a comic book fan. He reads a lot of Golden Age and Silver Age books, so he was getting rid of some stuff. So I got some old... That's not your bike.
No, that's not my bike. No, if that was my bike, you would hear a mic drop and gunfire.
My pastor gave me a huge box of hardcovers, which included some awesome, awesome oversized Prince Valiant books. I got some Action Comics, some Green Lantern stuff, some Rawhide Kid. I mean, just a ton of good stuff. And most of it, like I was saying, was Golden Age. But he gave me the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus, with the old Steve Ditko and Stan Lee stuff, and the Fantastic Four Omnibus by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And those just set it off. I've been, you know, sitting back and enjoying those. And the retouching they've done, they've recolored all these books for the Omnibuses, however you say it. It's been phenomenal. They look really good. And just digging back into those comics that I haven't read in, you know, years, you know, especially the Spider-Mans. I haven't read those since I was a little kid. It's just so entertaining. It's fun to read them, you know, one after another. So those have been great. Those have been really keeping me busy. Those and Mouse.
That's one thing that blew my mind at the convention. Al was excited. So this is the biggest haul he's ever made out of a convention. I was really happy with all the stuff I got. Dallas shows up. Come on out, guys. So we went out in the parking lot. And then he pulls out these stacks of books. I'm like, what? He ended up giving me a... Four of the copies of Popeye, those big hardcovers I was talking about. And I'm like, you know, that was quite a bit. I got a lot of stuff. I got Joe Kubert's Enemy Ace she gave me. And a little staggering. And each one of us got a big haul, and I'm trying to figure out how Dallas got it, and then he told me about his pastor. Thank you very much. I'm kind of stunned why you get rid of some of the stuff that you obviously just bought, but... I kept saying, does he know you're passing this stuff on to other people? See, it's what he said to do. If you don't want it, just pass it on. So thanks for sharing the wealth, Dallas.
Yeah, absolutely. I only brought it up
so
you guys
much
can
so.
Make me feel good. No, I'm just kidding. well, guys, I say we pause for a music break. Rick and I can go grab another beer, take a quick break. This next song is by one of our favorite artists here, and it's another local band. They're not together anymore, so that obviously fits the criteria. This is The Primitive Astronauts. Enjoy. Was The Primitive Astronauts, and we're back, guys. Thanks for listening. So, we're kind of off the cuff on this episode. We don't really have any big topics to talk about, I think, but I do see that you brought a huge pile of books, Don.
Yeah, I did. Well, I don't know why.
Yeah, I brought some books, too. Well, I do want to talk about a book. Might as well do it now. So, there's a comic. A while back, we were all talking about reading books monthly, you know, and I was talking about how I wanted to get back into reading a book, you know, because I don't read anything monthly, I just pick up trades. So I was thinking about picking up Chew by John Layman and Rob Gilroy. And so Don's
nice
like...
Nice reading that off the cover.
Shut up. So Don's like, well, you know, before you pick up, you know, a couple issues of that, I have the first trade, so why don't I let you borrow that so you can read into it and, you know, see if you actually like it, if you want to start, you know, collecting it. And it's got probably the first four or five issues in it. So, you know, I borrowed it from him, and it took me forever to get around to it because I was reading that Joe Sacco book. Finally got around to Chew. And it was pretty good. I have to say, I've read a lot of reviews about Chew. I've heard a lot about Chew, and it's always people just raving about how amazing this book is. The only person that I heard that... Yeah, I was about to say, the only person that I've heard that didn't really care for it all that much was you, Rook. So,
yeah, no, I just couldn't get into it.
Jumping into it, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm going to start with that. However, it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be, and I think that's because of all the raving I've heard, and it had kind of, I had high expectations going into it. Now, the art style, you know, it's very cartoony, which is perfectly fine with me. I'm not a huge fan of the art style, although it kind of resembles Scotty Young in a way, which is one of my favorite artists. However, Scotty's art, especially his more recent stuff, especially the Wizard of Oz books, are very refined and touched up, and his style has gotten so much better over the last number of years, and the painting is amazing. So it's quite a bit more refined, I would say, than Rob Gilroy's art. Now, he's a good artist, and he's very cartoony, like I said. I like it, but it's not usually my cup of tea.
So, 1 to 10, what would you give it?
All right, well, the art, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to go 6. The story, I'm going to have to say, I'm going to give the story an 8, because it was actually pretty damn good. I mean, the story was well written, it was paced great. It was paced very well. A lot of the issues, a lot of the chapters in the trade were neat because it would start halfway through the story, and then you'd have to go back and retrace the footsteps to see how they got to that point.
Dallas, what's the book about? What's the storyline?
Oh, okay.
What's the deal with it?
Sorry. So Chu is basically about a police detective named Tony Chu. Now, the world that he lives in, chicken, poultry, has been outlawed. Now, there was a huge outbreak, a chicken outbreak.
Bird flu.
Yeah, the bird flu, thank you. And many people died. And ever since, chicken's been outlawed. Now, there's a lot of small places, seedy little restaurants.
Speakeasies.
Yes, basically speakeasies that you can go to and actually get chicken. Now, Tony is a sebopathic, I guess you could say. Basically, when he eats food, he can sense and feel where that food has come from. For instance, and I think a great example in the first issue, the way they describe it, if Tony eats an apple, he'll feel and see the tree that it came off of and all the processes that the apple has gone through to get to him. If he eats a hamburger, he's going to feel that cow growing up, getting killed, and seeing where the cow, you know, how it got to the hamburger, basically. So because of this, there's only one food that he can eat that he doesn't get this feeling and this sensation, and that's beets. So pretty much all he eats is beets. So the first issue starts off with him in a grocery store buying beets.
Yeah, but
yeah, that's a weird... Al just gave me an awesome face. He's like, I hate beets.
If I recall, he can still get the feeling from beets, but beets, just they're so boring that it doesn't overload him, right? Isn't
maybe
that it?
Well, that wasn't in this first trade that I remember.
I can't recall either.
Yeah,
I
remember
it's been
that,
a while.
Too. He did.
I glossed over that part, I guess.
Like I said, my daughter found this book, and she was interested in it. I liked all of it. I really enjoyed reading that book. I read it before I left. And I thought she'd get the other ones, and I'd read the whole series. To me, it's certainly a story-driven series. I mean, the story is what caught me. You know, the artwork I liked for what it was in the story, but it wasn't the type of artwork I'd normally go for. But I thought it went just perfect with the story itself. And at the same time, I try to imagine myself drawing that story. And all of a sudden, it just turns into a 10 to me, what the guy pulled off.
Nice. Yeah, well, I'd agree. I mean, the pacing, I said the story pacing is good, but so is the art pacing. I mean, the angles and some of the dynamics that the artists use are pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
Now, yeah, once again, I think maybe it's just not our cup of tea. It's not the style that we'd usually look for, and that's maybe why I gave it a lower grade. But, and that's not to say it's bad, because it's, by any account, it's good artwork. It's nice.
It is great artwork. It's just not the type I think, you know, I go for. I think all of us.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter, you know, she read about half of it and gave it back and said, here, you can take it.
It's got a real strong cast of characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, each character in it has personality. I mean, you got Tony's, his chief, basically. He joins the FDA, which is funny. It's kind of like the CIA in this world. And his chief is just a really hard case. He's always getting on Tony Chu's ass. And it's great to see him, you know, because you know exactly what his motivation is. And it's fun. It's a fun episodic kind of story. So it is something I could see getting month after month and just kind of enjoying it, you know, just a quick, fun read. It's, I think maybe, I read it right after that Joe Sacco book. The book was called Sefer Yegorajde, which was about the Bosnian War from the mid-90s. It was a really heavy-handed book, you know, real dense, really serious, somber. And so going from that to Chu, kind of, Chu was fun because it was a palate cleanser. You know, as funny as that might sound from this book. But I think because I had such high expectations, you know, that I was let down a little bit.
That happens to me a lot with movies. When everybody hypes up a movie, it's like I go in there with like an attitude, you know, and it's like, this better be damn good or I'm not going to give it, you know, a good review. And it's just like, it's when it catches you by surprise
that
it becomes something
I think one of the problems might be the houses, the studios that are creating movie trailers these days have gotten so damn good at making these movies look appealing. You can take a movie that's complete crap, 2 hours of junk, and make it look amazing.
See, my problem with movie trailers these days is that they give too much away in the damn trailer. I mean...
Well,
they basically tell you the entire freaking story. It's like you get done with the trailer and you go, meh, why am I going to go see it? I know what happens.
I agree.
Well, that's in everything. I just heard some writer on another podcast talking about that, about Previews Magazine. That you can see how many months ahead of the time. You can see all the covers.
And spoilers.
And one point they bring up is, can you imagine? Of course, I don't think you guys were around reading comics time, but when Gwen Stacy died in Spider-Man...
Knowing months ahead of time.
When that happened in the 70s, you didn't know until you picked it up off the stand.
Exactly.
And it was staggering. Everybody would be, what? Freaking out. And that's all gone. Now you see the covers far in advance. I guess that's why a lot of companies do those. They don't even use the same artist as the interior. And the covers are always kind of people standing around with their, in poses. It's not really the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of information right at your fingertips.
Speaking of Gwen Stacy, Emma Stone's playing her in the new Spider-Man. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know who it is. So.
Not a fan, Rook?
Honestly, I really don't give a crap about the new Spider-Man.
Who's playing Spider-Man?
It's Andrew Garfield?
I don't know.
Some kid I've never heard of.
Pretty much it's here's Marvel once again hitting the reset button, not just on their comics, but on their movies now, too.
That's a huge deal, too. They're doing that with Fantastic Four. They just found a new director for that.
Yeah, but really? I don't think Marvel, I think they sold those right, or it's licensed out to somebody else. Because the X-Men, the movies aren't Marvel, it's somebody else.
Really?
Iron Man was the first Marvel movie. Because the Fantastic Four is licensed out to one movie company.
Well,
X-Men's another one.
I think it might be, is it Fox? And the thing is, I think it's either Fox or it's another big company like that. And they have, or maybe Warner Brothers, I don't know. But, well, no, it's not Warner Brothers, that's DC. But they have the rights, I think, to a certain point. And then once that resets, then Disney still has the rights because Disney owns Marvel now. So, yeah. So if it's 20th Century Fox, then basically they have the rights to all these films for the next couple of years, so they can probably shoot out another X-Men film or two, but then after their contract expires, it's back in Disney and Marvel's hands.
Yeah, but I think Spider-Man's another movie company.
And, it might be. New Line
Fantastic
Cinema or
Four
something?
Was another one as well. But,
yeah, they license out their characters. I don't know if Disney's ever going to really, make a Marvel movie. I'm not sure exactly who's doing what for what company. But what I want to know is I got nothing against the Batman movies. I think they're good. But that's all I ever see from DC every couple of years, another Batman movie. I know there was a Green Lantern and a few things like that, but it's just like, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but enough already.
Well, that's
know?
Their biggest money. That's their cash cow right
there.
Is it
their cash cow?
I'm looking forward
to the Avengers.
Well, think about this, though. DC's got a decent number of films. They've had Jonah Hex, The Losers, Man of Steel's coming out either this year or next year.
When did The Losers come out?
Oh,
Last year?
That was like 2 years
was
ago.
It
wasn't that
ago?
The war book?
Yeah.
I never even saw that. I never even heard
it was
of
with...
It.
Did you see the Watchmen film? I know we've
yes,
talked
I
about
did.
This.
Yeah, yeah.
You know the guy that plays a comedian?
Yeah.
He's the main character in The Losers.
They didn't really hype it.
It was actually
that well.
A pretty good film.
But it's I just saw another Batman movie, and it's like somebody was making a point. It's like Batman doesn't even look like Batman anymore. He looks like Iron Man or something like that with all the gear he's got on. So it's just like I'm looking forward to the Avengers movies.
I love the Batman films. I love these Christopher Nolan films, man.
I mean, they're well done and everything, but I just got...
Really?
Yeah, the new Batmans are really good, but this is the last one with the director and... help me out, what's his name?
Christian Bale.
The director and Christian Bale have both said this is the last one, we're not doing anymore.
Christian Bale. Mic's in camera! The mic's in scene! That guy's...
I specifically...
Loose cannon.
I specifically hated the old Batman series, the one with George Clooney, the one with...
Oh my god, yeah. No, George Clooney was only in one of them. Then it was... Mad Mardigan was Batman one time.
Yeah.
Old Val Kilmer, yeah.
Val Kilmer. Oh my god.
Chopping up daikinis.
Well, that's what struck me. Somebody told me there was a Batman movie out. It's when that Batman Begins. What? Yeah, it's a new Batman movie. It's pretty good. You might want to go see it. Well, I didn't like the Batman movies anyway.
That was an undermarketed film, I think. The Batman Begins?
Somebody loaned me the DVD. It was good. And then, you know, Dark Knight was huge. But that one was completely under the radar. But the reason they do Batman is Batman sells. Those animated DVDs that DC puts out. To me, The New Frontier was just phenomenal. And I love the Wonder Woman. And then somebody was reading the sales figures of all these films. And the biggest ones are always Superman, Batman. The ones I love so much are, you know, the Green Lantern, the Wonder Woman. They were down at the bottom. But I haven't seen a lot of the Superman and Batmans because I wasn't interested. I'm kind of tired.
Well, how about like a Justice League of America movie or something?
That's been in the works for a couple of years.
You know, how about like a Hawkman or, you know, like all these characters
Hawkman
they got.
Hawkman would never get returns.
Look
they'd
how
never
long
get the money invested in a Hawkman movie. I'm sorry.
Look how long it took him to make a Green Lantern. I mean, the Flash is on the
list. Yeah, look how bad the Green Lantern was.
That's the thing, okay? Green Lantern was a flop fiscally. Superman Returns was a huge flop, and I think that's one of the reasons that DC has been so hesitant to release more of these superhero films, specifically a Superman film, for so long, because they want to make sure it's not going to be... they don't want to... If they keep releasing bad superhero movies, or bad Superman movies, people aren't going to want to go see them. So it's taken them a while to
Green
get their
Lantern
crap together.
It was not just a fiscal flop, it was an altogether flop.
Well, they did a Wonder Woman TV show that never got aired. A pilot was made and never got aired.
Yep.
I mean, it's... Come on, you guys.
Remember how excited Melody was about that, Don?
Yeah.
She wouldn't stop talking about it.
I kind of liked the Green Lantern movie, though. I remember when they were showing the commercials for the film. I thought, well, this looks awful. I never bothered to see it. And then a guy we all work with, he loved it. He bought the DVD, said, well, here, try it out. I watched it one day. I really enjoyed myself. It wasn't a perfect movie, but...
Well,
it wasn't a perfect movie. Jesus Christ, you can actually see Ryan Reynolds' head detach from his suit in one scene.
I do agree that the CG was pretty bad there, but the thing is...
It was a horrible movie.
So I thought it was fun. What got me, though, was the commercials for the DVD were far better than the commercials for the movie itself. And I thought, well, if I would have seen those, I probably would have gone to see it. Now... Al and I were at some comic store, and the guy just couldn't stop bashing that movie about how horrifying it was. I thought it was fun. Now, seeing that, I never went to buy it, you know. But watching it one time, I thought it was pretty good, you know.
Yeah, see, I got it for Christmas, and I've watched it once, and there are a few things that were done that were pretty cool. You know, I actually kind of liked the suit. I liked the CGI suit. It was pretty cool. The guy that played Sinestro, fantastic.
Yeah,
he was perfect Sinestro.
Good acting shines through.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I really think he stole the movie. But as far as Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern, no. He is not the Green Lantern. He is not Hal Jordan. It was Ryan Reynolds playing dress-up the whole damn movie.
Now, I did see they're going to do an animated Green Lantern series, and I did see, like, a pilot for it.
It's already started, actually.
It has.
Yeah, they played it on Cartoon Network,
I think, and it looked good.
Christmas.
It was nice. It was done in, like, a Pixar style, and it was really, really good. So maybe that'll be... And I did like the Batman Brave and the Bold, the TV series that was going on for a while. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
I think Don liked that, right? Is that the one?
Yeah, I didn't watch it all the time, but yeah, I did like it. I prefer when comic book stuff is animated. I've never particularly liked superhero movies. I always loved Superman 2 with Christopher Reeve. I like The Rocketeer, you know, from... I like that movie, and there's not really too many others I can think of. I did like Iron Man, you know. The Green Lantern was okay, and again, when I say that, I have no interest to buy it or really even see it again, but I enjoyed it when I did watch it.
Here's the thing, and Al, you had mentioned about being let down by movies. The thing is, and we can recognize this firsthand as comic book fans, as fanboys, that we have high expectations for these kind of films, so we're going to put them, you know, under a microscope. But I think what a lot of the houses aren't realizing, maybe now they're starting to, is these movies are being bogged down by continuity, by the origin of getting the characters right. Really, all we care about is a good film, a good story, you know? For instance, that Dark Knight, they can err on the side of not keeping continuity by changing characters up, as long as it's a good story, as long as it makes sense, as long as it's gripping, as long as it keeps you in the movie and you enjoy it. That's really all that matters, because...
Yeah, I don't mind changes. I don't mind them doing different things with characters. You know, I didn't mind, like with the X-Men movies, that certain characters were older than they should have been. I didn't mind any of that, because they were good movies. They were well-written, they were well-filmed, they were well-directed, you know, they had good actors. My problem with a lot of these movies that we're seeing now, like Green Lantern, Ghost Rider, they're poorly done. Bad acting, bad directors, bad CGI. Well, not on the side of Ghost Rider. That was some damn good CGI. But, you know, if you at least do a good job, I don't care if you completely change origin points or things like that.
I think X-Men First Class is a prime example of that. That couldn't hold up a candle to the... To the comics, because as far as background history and origin, it didn't make sense at all. But it was such a good film, you forgot those kind of things.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and that's one of the key points that I think that they need to realize. Write a good freaking movie, and the fanboys won't complain. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're still gonna goddamn complain.
That's the thing about fanboys. They're gonna complain about everything. They won't be happy, because they're happy complaining. They're happy about protecting what, you know, what belongs to them, what they grew up with.
Absolutely. That's why I do it. That's why I complain all the time.
Don complains about me. He criticizes every episode of Two Dimension. He says, what's wrong with this right here? That's not what happened in episode 7.
That's exactly what I do.
We have the Two Dimension Bible where it shows the continuity of every episode. It's together.
But you guys might be proud of me. I finally watched The Walking Dead, all right?
So. Oh,
wait. Yes. Round of applause.
Round of applause, yes.
Woo! Oh, my God, this is amazing.
Right, now, wait. Here's the big thing. Al, what did you think?
I liked it. Now, I watched the marathon. I didn't watch it all the way through, but I watched, like, about 3 or 4 of the episodes. And if you watch them back-to-back, it gets a little, you know, meaty, let's say. You know, you get a little too much gore. But I thought the story was well done, and there was, like, enough things that got me thinking that I'll probably continue watching it.
I've got the first season on DVD if you want to borrow it.
Yeah, I would. So. I'd like to watch them. I wouldn't want to watch them back-to-back-to-back, but maybe once every few days.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that struck me as interesting, and you guys can answer the question for me, is there was one part, and I forgot what episode it was. It was the third or the fourth, where he meets the guy who's in the man who's in the... I think the disease control building.
Oh, the CDC?
Yeah. And I was really interested in the part that when they're getting ready to leave, he whispered something into the police.
That is actually the last episode of the first season.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay. And what he whispered in his ear, I'm really, like, intrigued as to what
okay.
It is.
All right. So here is the big question mark of that first season. What did he tell Rick? And there's a lot of theories that state, you know, he told Rick that Lori is pregnant. He told Rick that the kid's not his. You know, there's a lot of different theories behind what exactly did the doctor tell Rick. What did he whisper to him? Did he whisper to him the location of a zombie-free area? Things like that. And I think, actually, in part of Season 2, didn't he start to tell someone what was said to him? I think he started to tell Herschel about the doctor told him, he whispered it in my ear before we left, and then whoever he was talking to just dismissed him, like, I don't want to hear it. So you're sitting there like, oh, yes, finally, oh, you damn it, now I don't know what he said.
Son of a...
So, yeah, it that's still a question mark in the series, is what did... that he tell Rick.
My thought process was, did he tell him basically what exactly is going on? Does he have a clue as to what really is going on? And
I don't think he does. I mean, basically what he had found out about the zombies, he showed them with his wife.
Right. Yeah, right, when he killed her. When
yeah,
he showed
exactly.
Her, yeah.
He shot her through the head, and, you know, he just saw the brainwave patterns and what was being reactivated after they died.
Or whether he told them whether this wasn't like, this was something that was created specifically, maybe, yeah, to eliminate the population.
I think that's one of those big mystery questions that we're going to be left with for a while.
But is it? But my next question is, will it be resolved? Because it's not being resolved in the comic book, and this TV series, was it going to go on indefinitely? I don't know. I mean, does Kirkman have a finale for this? I don't know.
Seasons 3 and 4, I think, have already been picked up.
I believe so. I believe he has been picked up for 2 more seasons. Okay. As far as the book goes, he has been quoted on Talking Dead after the show, saying that I have long-term plans for the book. So Kirk, with the book, he has some long-term plans and goals in mind. Whether he's got them all set up for the show, who knows? Because, you know, television is very fickle. You know, I mean, he could return with the new second part of season 2, and the ratings could drop. We don't know. That's true. So,
yeah. Speaking of which, you know when it comes back?
Very soon.
Yeah, February 12th. I knew it was a couple weeks away. Yeah, AMC, Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Coming back next month. Quite excited.
I've got one thing about that. We were talking about, you watched the whole marathon of it, and you said you'd rather...
About 3 or 4
of the episodes. You'd rather see it in pieces. I heard somebody talking about buying DVD sets and just watching one after another compared to just watching it weekly on TV like we're all used to. And you mentioned when you started reading Rot Walking Dead. You know, you read the trades at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you started reading single. What do you prefer? Do you have a preference? Would you rather read single issues or trades?
With some series, I'd rather read trades. Other stuff that I read is kind of, you know, throwaway filler stuff. I hate to say it because Hack and Slash is a good book. It is interesting, but it's kind of one of those more like it's filling my time kind of things. You know, I have nothing to do. Oh, okay. Because I went to the comic book shop last night, picked up my books, and when I got home, I realized I had issue 12 in my bag of Hack and Slash. Well, I realized I hadn't read issue 11 yet. So, Hack and Slash is really kind of one of those filler books. So, that's something I'll read in single issues. But when it comes to something like Walking Dead, I'd rather have trades. Because with the book, you're reading along, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my god, it's over already, what the hell? Come on, give me more! You know, and...
Yeah, that's
so.
A good answer. Dallas?
Trades or singles?
Yeah, I mean, do you have a preference? Yeah. I know that you know...
Well, yeah, honestly, overall it would be trades, because I like sitting down and reading a nice... something that has a beginning, middle, and end. That's what I like, you know? But I'm trying to get back into that episodic kind of books, and that's why I was talking about Chew, and that was the reason I read the trade in the first place, is because I want to find something that can capture my attention and entertain me. Almost like you said, Hack Slash, just a fun, quick read once a month.
See, I'd rather my episodic books to be in trade... That way, you know, I get the whole meal, to put a phrase in. I get the entire meal there. In front.
Agreed.
Instead of, you know, getting a little bite here and there, I get the entire thing in one shot.
And the thing about the trades, too, I've been noticing, is that sometimes they put extra stuff in the trades.
Yeah.
So you're buying the episodic ones, and you got it, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute, why didn't I wait? I'm getting, like, an extra story or extra artwork. So maybe it's best to wait.
The reason I even asked that, I was in Texas in September, and there was a store. I apologize, I can't remember the name. I will post the blog. It was a small store, and when I went in there, you always have a list of certain things you're looking for. And I'd been to that store years and years before, found some issues, and the guy realized I was looking for specific things. And he saw my list and went through it. And instantly we became good friends. He, all the books I had, with exception of Umbrella Academy, he liked, you know. And he kept saying, this is a pretty far-out list. I mean, it wasn't just one thing. And then he was talking about...
Soggy?
No, well, I had some of those. I had a Gru. You know, he was a big Gru fan. I had one issue I was looking for. You know, I can't really call it a sporadic list or whatever. It was just while, you know, out there. But, you know, the guy I love comics, he's a huge Walking Dead fan. The strange thing, my mom took me to the store. It's funny, I'm 50 and my mom took me to the comic store. But I didn't have a car. But I went up there and there's nobody in the store. And then this guy jumps out of his car. And I said, were you leaving? Oh, no, no. Come to find out, he reads his comic books in the store. I'm in the car. He just, I guess he likes to go in there and sit in the car and read. I don't know why.
Everybody's got their little thing, you know?
But, you know,
the store. I like to watch mine sitting next to my wife on the couch while she watches Sex and the City or Real
Housewives.
Yeah,
okay, I'm not the only one. I do that too. But, you know, we talked, we started talking about comic books, and he was, you know, like all of us, he'd get really excited about things. He started talking about Walking Dead. That's what he was reading out there. And he can't wait to get that every month. And he said everybody at the store knows that when that book comes in, don't bother him. He's going to close the store. He's going to sit in his car and read the book. And he said all the customers know that. You know, it's just the ritual. That's how it is. But he cannot wait for that book to come. And he says after he reads it, he opens the store, sorts everybody's books, and they get it. Well, you know, to me that's passion and, you know, good. But a funny story he told me, which I couldn't believe, he ordered, I don't know if he ordered 60 of the first issue or something, but it just caught him, and he ordered quite a bit, more than he could, you know, possibly push. And but he always pushed that book, you know, he always ordered a bunch of them. And he said this one guy came in the store, introduced him, or talked to him, shook his hand, and said, I understand, you know, you ordered, you know, a lot of The Walking Dead. Did he have it? He says, oh, yeah. And he told him what he thought and how much he liked it. It was Robert Kirkman.
No kidding.
That's awesome.
This is in Wichita Falls, Texas, the town I was born. And it's the only reason to go there is if you want to go to Wichita Falls. It's not passing through anywhere, and there's nothing around it. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And basically, Robert Kirkman was looking at, I guess this guy ordered more books than anybody else in the country. And he was basically doing a thank you tour, going around and introducing himself and shaking hands. I thought that was pretty amazing.
He's like a cool guy.
Well, you know, for Kirkman, when he started that book, he really was pretty much nobody. I mean, he was just another guy in the comic book industry.
Oh, that's true.
You know, nowadays, I mean, he's VP of Image Comics and everything, you know, but back then he really wasn't, you know, people knew his name and stuff, but he wasn't one of the big names out there. I don't recall.
Yeah, I guess he got bigger as the years went on.
Yeah.
Well, this guy that ran the store, one question he asked me, do you prefer singles or trades? And I, like the rest of you, I didn't really know if I had a preference. I like getting trades. I'm glad they're out. He was the opposite. He prefers single issues and single issues only. He did have trades in his store. In the past, I would have said the same thing. As everybody knows, one of my favorites was when Walt Simonson did Thor. I couldn't wait every month for that to come out. And when I started seeing them put those in trades, I wasn't really too interested. You know, those were never really meant like in four-issue arcs or anything like that. So in those cases, I prefer the single issues. But I do love buying trades. You can put them on a shelf. You know, it's not like the little flap. Flimsy pamphlets and you keep in a box or anything. I love Jack Staff. I found an issue of it in a dollar box. So this is pretty good. Looked him up online and I just started ordering trade after trade. I do get the single issues now, but I find I enjoyed that book a little more in the trades because it was a thicker read and it seemed to flow. One, Watchmen. I read that in the single issues. Now, my brother got the trade, and I was really impressed that basically what the trade did is they just took all 12 issues and put them together, you know, in sequence. You saw the cover. You saw the little back matter stories they had in each issue. So it was all in sequence. But I just heard somebody talking about that in the past, and we read the single issues of Watchmen, everybody basically, you read the issue, you read the back matter, you read the issue again, read the back matter again, and you did that like six times before the next issue came out. You went to the store, talked to your friends about it. I mean, we had that thing memorized. We even knew the indica at the beginning of the book. And I find a lot of people, when they read the trade, they just completely skip the back matter. You know, it's a different experience.
That's a shame, because that's part of the charm of the story.
Oh, it was great. That's why when my brother had it, I mentioned the back matter. He saw what's in here, and I looked and said, well, you know, if you had some discipline, you know, you could just read each issue on its own. But that's a different kind of thing. I do like getting trades and reading some trades. As I mentioned at the convention, I got the Marvels. I read those in single issues. And when I got the trade, I thought it'd be nice to have it all in one unit. And I found I didn't really enjoy it as much as just grabbing the single issues and reading it. Yep. So that's something I thought about after that guy asked me the question. There are some books I do prefer in trades. When the Simonson Thor stuff came out, I went overseas. I was in the Navy, and I was gone for, you know, 9 months. And it was rare to ever find comic books. Once in a while, I'd find a couple. But when I went back home, this guy was saving them for me at the store, and I had like 7 months of Walt Simonson to read. When I was telling friends of mine, they just couldn't imagine being able to read a whole chunk of something you love so much. But I didn't enjoy it any less, you know. So, I don't know. It's fun to get a comic book every month and read one, but I've never really minded the trades. So I'm happy to find out there's a trade if you like something. I don't have to go store to store and store to store hunting down single issues that are impossible to get, whereas you can get one big chunk of something. Anyway.
I think so. Am I right in saying the general consensus is trades? Okay. Yeah. All right.
I mean, you know, like, I just picked up a book. I'll probably get this here. It's called Lobster Johnson. It's a detective thing.
Hellboy,
right?
Yes,
yeah, from the Hellboy, and I'm liking the first issue already. So I'm just going to keep buying it. I mean, if I would have found out it after the fact, I would, you know, get the trade instead of going back and get individual issues. But it's kind of fun also to like not know where the story's going to go.
Oh, I do agree there, and that's like I keep bringing up the episodic nature of it. You know, just boom, boom. Here's another reveal every episode.
Yeah. I actually picked that up, and I picked up one called BPRD, Guy Davis, and I actually liked both of those.
Yeah.
I liked both of those books. It was, you know, a pad at Comics World gave me a deal, so I was like, okay, I'll pick up some stuff that I'd never read before, and
nice,
I actually
man.
Liked the work. I also got a Dark Horse Presents 100-page issue.
The new Dark Horse Presents?
It's number three. It was number three.
Yeah, they started doing those again, because those are
nice.
From the late 80s, early 90s. But
these are all new stories. It was like Dave Gibbons and Steranko, and there was a Neil Adams in there, and
wow.
Mike Gilbert. It was nice, yeah. So I'm getting into the Dark Horse universe a little bit more now. Yeah, so good stuff.
There's definitely some good stuff in Dark Horse.
Always been. I mean, I never read a lot, but I remember reading quite a bit of Concrete when I was younger, and I always loved that.
There's a new Concrete story in there, too.
Sweet.
I'll bring it in. You can check
it
out.
Please.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well.
I was going to say, you can't bring it in. That's like illegal downloading. You can't share. Well, you're going to have to buy your own copy and like
yes.
it.
Yes, sir.
All right. You know, I know we can copy music, kind of. I think I've heard we can make copies of music that we get. I know, but I'm just waiting for the day where you can stick in, like, a comic book and make a copy of it and, like, give it to somebody else. Yeah.
Okay, folks. Well, we're going to call it, I think, because this episode's just about done. So I say we wrap it up, and we're going to have plenty to talk about the next time. So I really hope everyone's enjoyed listening to us. I want to throw out a couple plugs. First, I want to throw out a plug for myself. I have a great webcomic that's out now, and pretty soon we'll have a link on the blog. But if
we
you want
do
to
have a link on the blog.
Oh, we do? Okay.
It's on the sidebar.
It's so
you
good
never
the
go
host
to
knows
it.
What's going on.
Awesome. Awesome. It's probably right under... Yeah, it's called The Mighty Blue, and the URL is mightybluecomic.blogspot.com. And you can read it every week on Thursdays. I update it with a new part. It's just a one page every week. And it's all characters from the novel I wrote, which you can also find a link to my novel, The Circle Theory, on our blog. And Don, you have a blog too. That thing's been running for a very long time. I kind of like to pimp it out, you know, see if anyone's interested.
Well, yeah, I have two. I've got a LiveJournal page. And I also have a blog spot. The blog spot I just put on because somebody wanted me to make comments on theirs. I put a few drawings, but not much happens. The LiveJournal page I do go on sometimes, but I haven't written anything for a long time. It's just a lot of nothing.
Oh, okay.
But
well, we can put links to those in the show if anyone's interested.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. I hope everyone enjoyed it, and please join us next week. And you can find us, if you haven't already found us, on our blog. Our blog site is twodimensionpodcast.blogspot.com. Also, you can find us on Facebook, and you can friend us there, too. Just look up Two Dimension Podcast. Until then, everyone enjoy yourselves, take care, and read more comics.